Pretty big weekend for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Or not. You either cement yourselves as the most disappointing core, genuinely, maybe in NHL history. Like, when has this happened? There are better historians of the game. Note that there is no doubt. But I do fancy myself as a man who knows a thing or two about the league. And I'd sure like to see a core that had this much talent, this much pedigree, this many accomplishments in the regular season be given 9 opportunities to make a run and never make it past the second round and only get to that second round twice. The phone lines are open. No, they're not, but you can shoot me a message at JD Bunkus anytime. You know it. Tell me, is there ever one? This is it. You get that legacy, or, and this is a weird one to think about, and this is probably a little too Toronto-centric. This is probably a little too Leafy. Or you get one of the more shocking comebacks ever, down just 3-2. Like, this market, maybe it wouldn't, other people on the outside, they would probably acknowledge this as well. It's the Florida Panthers, the defending Stanley Cup champions, but all of that trauma that you have endured over those last 9 years, all of the evidence that you have been presented about who these players are and what this organization is over the last 9 years, if they were to now come back and win this series, which is a possibility, okay? I know it doesn't feel probable, but it is possible, would somehow feel like one of the greater comebacks you can imagine. I actually equated it, I think on Leafs Talk, I don't think I did it here, to like the Red Sox coming up back against the Yankees. Old Kevin Millar saying, don't let us win this game. Don't let the Sox get hot. Hey, if we win this game, we got Pedro in game 6. Or we got, Pedro in game 5 and Schill in game 6 and game 7. Anything can happen. It genuinely feels like that. And, man, I got to be honest. I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. I think that they will lose one of these two games. I agree with many people where it feels like the leafiest outcome is to win a game 6, inspire some hope, and then bring it back to this arena, to this city, only to have another egg laying or even a frustrating loss in some other weird way to torture an already tortured fan base that at this point has been through so much that you start to go, hey, simulation theory sounds right here. How much can some people endure? Oh, only 2 people threw jerseys on the ice still? Oh, I guess we got to keep going with this. I think we got to keep going with the simulation. So they'll still keep supporting this team, I guess. All right. Keep run the simulation back again. Let's see what ends up happening here. Either way, those are the stakes. Those are the stakes. You either are the biggest, I don't want to say losers, because you're not. It's the most disappointing team. It's the most disappointing team, genuinely, in NHL history, given the pedigree, given the amount of opportunities, given the regular season successes, and all of what turned into what is just absolutely zero postseason success. 2 times where you made the second round, or an incredible comeback that nobody saw coming. Because I think genuinely today, even the most optimistic, even the diehard, who presents themselves as an optimistic Leaf fan, who presents themselves like, man, okay, just quick aside on this. One of those people is like my mother. My mother is a sweet lady who only sends me positive texts And even when the Leafs lose, it's like, oh, that was a tough one. Even she was starting to send stuff like, I don't know about these guys after that last game. So I think even the most forward-facing, positive fan today is looking at this going, yeah, I'm rooting for them and maybe, but I don't see it. And that, to me, makes it an extremely shocking outcome if they are to get back in the series. Still, to me, it feels like there is only one way. Still, to me, it feels like they have to split up Matthews and Marner. Still, to me, it will feel unbelievably disappointing tonight if they roll out the lines and they say, hey, what's coming over the boards is 16 and 34 together. I really subscribe to the theory that Blake Wheeler came up with yesterday, which is, hey, if you've got two guys who are struggling and both guys look like they're dealing with it mentally, maybe the best thing is to split them up. I do subscribe to the theory now that, hey, stoicism is good. Hey, Bill Belichick was a stoic. He had a pretty successful career until recently. For the kids, saying someone was like Bill Belichick used to be like a really, really good thing. Now it's means something different, but it used to be something really admirable when it came to coaching. There is a difference between stoicism and, being asleep at the wheel, which I think that maybe is the case if you end up running things back the exact same way. But can they will it? They've never willed it. And that, to me, still seems like the formula if you're going to get a comeback, more so than just believing in pipe dreams of, well, you out-goalie them and Bobrovsky, you know, poos his pants and can't do anything. Anyway, Luke Fox, senior writer for Sportsnet, he's there. He joins me now. What's up, buddy? How are we?
Doing okay. It's pretty crazy. So this is the second Friday morning in a row that I've woken up in Florida. And the first time there was talk of, well, we need to get refundable flights, and who knows if we'll even need this game six. Like, the Leafs might, well, maybe they won't sweep, but they might take care of them in five. And just how quickly, this series has turned. And you think about game three with a 2-0 lead, a 3-1 lead, and then it's been all Florida ever since, and how swiftly this thing has turned. And now it feels like it's over, even though it isn't over at all, but it certainly feels that way. It was really crazy because it felt like the end, even though there's more hockey to be played.
You know, that's probably the most optimistic outlook that I can have from this, is that it's like, hey, it felt over the last time you were in Florida, and now it feels over again when you're in Florida, and maybe it's not over when you're in Florida.
Sports.
Yeah, sports. Exactly. That's why. So I got a lot of, when I did Leafs talk after game three, I was pretty annoyed with the loss. And I went, man, that's just such a swinging, sliding doors moment where there's so many bounces that don't go your way. You have the lead. You're on the road. It's 2-0. You punched Florida in the face to open it. And I got so much like, you're overreacting. And I felt like the person in the horror movie where they're like warning you of something, like, don't go to this lake, don't go to that cabin in the woods. Trust me, there's bad things out there. And I was like, you're crazy, man. You're insane. If Matthews isn't scoring, it's fine. He just needs to play defense. It's okay. They're still up 2-1 in the series. And I've just seen so many sports, and specifically this team. And I was like, I don't know. That's a much worse loss than I think people realize. And boom, here we are back in Florida, the Leafs down 3-2. Before we get actually into the nitty-gritty of this, have people sent you your article that you wrote of Matthews before he was in the NHL, his season in Zurich?
What? No. No.
No? You're not aware of this?
What?
So you wrote...
You gotta remind... I write like 10 articles a week.
I know you do, but Of course you do. But I thought that you would have gotten this one because it has sort of, it's ended up in my mentions a few times, and I've read it, and I've gotten it from a whole bunch of people who are like, hey, have you seen this? So you wrote, So you wrote an article after Matthews had an exit in Zurich, and I want to read you the excerpt of this, okay? So this is your piece. I'll read it in my voice, though. Matthews and his top-seeded Zurich Lions, 31-12-1, were victims of a shocking first-round playoff sweep at the hands of SC Bern in a Swiss National League A Thursday. Bern, the NLA's eighth-ranked club, upset Zurich, coached by Mark Crawford, sweeping the quarterfinal with four consecutive victories, the first three by one-goal margin. Bern clinched the series Thursday with a 3-0 shutout performance by Czech goalie Jakub Stepanak. The 18-year-old Matthews lit up the Swiss League in his rookie campaign, scoring 46 points in 36 games. Seeing plenty of ice time, the Scouts' number one-ranked prospect notched 3 assists but failed to score a goal in the Lions' short-lived playoff appearance. Zurich was slightly better than Bern in the first two games, but the puck did not go their way, said Thomas Roost, who evaluates talent in Switzerland and Germany for the NHL Central Scouting. Quote, Matthews played very well in both games. They produced, had great pressure, and lots of scoring chances, but Matthews is a bit unlucky right now. He hit a post a few times, end quote. Luke Fox, article from 2016.
Oh, my gosh. 9 years ago. Still unlucky, eh?
Yeah, still unlucky. Like, there has never been a greater example of what was to come.
I don't remember writing that. That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, people were sending that to me. Shout out to Pete Walker, again, who was the first one that alerted it to me. But yeah, multiple people were sending me that article. And then some people were asking me if I'd read it. And, you know, I go through the DMs and I especially try to interact with people after really bad losses like that. And that one kept coming back to me over and over and over again. And it's been on my mind ever since I read it, which was, yeah, after game 4 or game 5, one of the two. But I can't stop thinking about it. Like, I can't stop thinking about how, yeah, this is technically 9 postseason runs. And Matthews, I think, was very good. I think he scored 4 goals, actually, in the Washington series. Maybe 3, but he was dynamite in that series. It was like, holy crap, this guy's a phenom. And there have been times, there have been some examples, I think, of last year where he was injured, but he came in that one game against Boston and just went Super Saiyan mode, right? And just completely dominated that team.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you went, oh my God, he's unlocking it. This is the guy that everybody was promised. And yet here we are again, where he and Marner both look like two guys that have not been able to elevate in a matchup. And yeah, I wonder for you, where are you at in terms of what is happening here? Confidence, you know, guys with maybe a guy with a foot out the door. I know I'm kind of combining the two, and maybe there's two different answers here. Injury, you know, team trauma. What is your prevailing theory as to what we're seeing with that line in this series, or specifically these last couple of games?
Yeah, and I think us as on the outside, we want to point to one thing and saying this is the problem, and if they just fix this one thing, then they could get over the hump and they could perform in these big games when the pressure mounts. But I honestly think it's a combination of a lot of those things you mentioned. And one thing you didn't mention, and it's hard for Leaf fans to think about it sometimes, and that's the other team is really good. And the other team doesn't have one shutdown line. It has two. So Anton Lundell and the Marchand Lustonen line, they're awesome. We already know that the Barkov line with Reinhardt has two of the three Selke finalists on it. They're awesome at limiting chances. So that is an element too. That's not all of it, but Florida is absolutely a fantastic defensive team from their forwards through to their D and their goalie. So that, like, that's a huge factor that they've proven it. They're the champs. Now that kind of brings me back to training camp. And when you tried to spread out and have three lines that can score, and then you abandon that idea before you even get out of preseason. And it's because when things get tough and you get to round 2 and you get to round 3 and heaven forbid round 4, you're going to have teams that have more than one line that can shut you down, and you can't get your best guys away from them, which is why you should use the regular season to try and build more than one scoring line. Berube is just stuck with those two guys with knives the whole way. And yeah, they've had success, but it's different over a 7-game series where they can really study you, zero in on you, and pick you apart. So that's a huge part of it. But the other part is mental, man. Like Craig Berube said it yesterday. He was like, these guys are overthinking. They're not just playing. They're not being aggressive. It's like they're afraid. They're more afraid to make a mistake than they are excited to make the play. And you know, it results in some brain dead things. Like at the beginning of the series, we were saying okay, the puck hasn't fallen yet, but they're getting a slight edge territorially. Or they're not giving up anything to Barkov, who can score too. And now, you know, that last game, it was Matthews with an egregious giveaway that led to the first goal. Marner's was, you know, it's making the rounds everywhere. It was just ridiculous, like spinning blind backhand in the neutral zone and then not going to back check. It's like you're so stunned by your mistake, and all of a sudden you're in your head, oh my God, I made a bad mistake, instead of hustling and trying to make up for it. So I think the mental thing, the fact that Panthers are good, you know, they say they're not thinking about the past, they're living in the moment, but how can you not? I mean, it's the reason why they shouldn't have let it get this far. It's like you show up at training camp every year, you're looking around at the same faces that lost and underwhelmed in the most important times the last 7-8 years, and just builds again and again and again. They keep running it back and no move clauses. And it's to the point where you almost feel bad for them. It's weird. It's like you could be frustrated that they're not performing and stepping up, but it's almost like a wounded animal that you feel bad for at times.
Yeah. I don't have that part of me. And I would if I...
For putting them in this situation.
I do blame management for this situation that they're in. And if they do end up losing the series, in my actual eulogy show, right, in my post-mortem shows, I will unquestionably hold management to account. The reason why I don't... And where I put management's fault in a lot of this is that they empowered these guys to the degree in which they essentially got to run some of the operation. But I think all the way back to that summer, like, again, I'm not new here. I think back to that summer where Mike Babcock had to fly to Arizona to try and ingratiate himself and make good with Austin Matthews because he wasn't playing him with Mitch Marner. And that from the very beginning, Matthews was like, you got to play me with this guy, period. I want this amount of ice time and I want to play with this guy. And how much of the fact that they didn't split these guys up and that they didn't look at three different lines had to do with the power that these players exerted through either their no movement clauses, the fact that they were stuck with these organizations. And yes, those are contracts that, again, the front office gave out. That is a culture that they allowed to build with this hockey team. But if you're Matthews and Marner and you're looking at this and saying, any part of you is going, well, man, maybe there was a different way forward and maybe I could have played with somebody else and maybe I didn't get the coaches that got the best out of me. It's like, no, you were complicit in this. Again, you asked for the most amount of money. You never took any type of a haircut of a deal. You wanted to extend these negotiations to a spot where, you know, you knew players from this roster were going to have to be trimmed that maybe you could have played with, which is fine, which is your right. Everybody deserves to make what the market is going to be willing to pay you. And so, yeah, fine. Go ahead and do that. Yes, the pandemic and the flat cap ended up hurting this and making these contracts look even worse. So that was outside of your control. But ultimately, to never waive these no move clauses, to never want to experiment playing with other players, to only have these little tiny moments where during a slump, they would go, okay, well, Marner with Tavares for a bit. Right. And then what, back within a game, back within maybe even a couple of periods where they would say, okay, back to shaking it up. When you are those guys and you command that dollar figure, when you perform and granted the way that you do in the regular season, which is extremely well, unbelievably impressive, 100-point season for Mitch Marner. When you are given Matthew Nyes on that line, you're supposed to be matchup proof. Are you supposed to dominate it every single night? No, it's hockey. Not everybody is going to win. Like, this isn't going to look like Nikolai Jokic every night. In fact, and even he's had some bad games in this Oklahoma City series, right? Like, he had a game, I think it was game 4 or game 5, where he just went like 0 of 10 from 3. It was awful. Couldn't buy a bucket. That happens. You have bad games. What you don't see is year over year, there being like a shutdown line, a Philip Deneau line that locked you up, right? A Barkley Goudreau line that locked you up. You don't have so many different examples of this. And when you're trying to make a cup run, you know what you're going to run into time and time again? A really good shutdown line, a really deep other team, a really strong opponent. Like the idea that they ran into the Florida Panthers and, woo, that's a tough break. Remember how many times people have done, well, the Leafs have lost to the team that went to the Stanley Cup X amount of times. Like, yeah, that's what happens. There's only 8 teams that make the postseason. You know, like it's not a miracle that this happened. This isn't an odds defying thing that has gone on here. You play good teams. You got to be able to elevate. But this begs the question now is like, what do they do tonight? Because the sense that everyone gets with, I think, a rational thinking brain, is that you've got to split these two guys up. And yet I don't know if it's going to happen. What is your sense being there and observing this from up close?
My sense is I don't think it's going to happen, and I think it should happen. And the reason why I don't think it's going to happen is they were horrible their first shift of game five. Really important, right? Really important period. And after the game, all Brube did was say, it was our start. It was our first period. That's what killed us. And he was late to break them up. He didn't break them up until it was out of hand and the game was essentially over.
I was going to say, I think it was like midway through the second period.
Yeah, it was at least 3-0. It might have been 4-0 by the time he hit the blender. So that makes me think he's not going to do it. The other thing is, they get a power play in garbage time after a garbage performance and bring on the first unit. And I hated that.
I know.
I hated that. I thought that sent the wrong message. So I feel like they're going to get what they like. And he didn't really experiment too much. And the funny thing is, there was that stretch, I want to say December, maybe late November, December, when Matthews went to Germany and missed like 10 in a row. The Leafs had one of their best stretches of the regular season, and that was Marner with Tavares. That line was incredible. So it always kind of surprised me that he didn't go back to that when Matthews was healthy, but they weren't clicking for a bit. He didn't use it more often. So we're actually going to see, they're doing a full morning skate at the Panthers practice facility at 11:30. So they should do line rushes, and I don't think he's going to play games. I think whatever they do, that's probably what they'll go into. And then if they get down, he'll probably hit the blender then. But I'm with you. I would like to see it different. I don't have faith that he's going to do anything too different.
Again, I don't get it. Even the way that he shuffled up the lines to start, it was just flipping the left wingers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it wasn't splitting up Matthews and Marner. It was like,
I think that's why? Because he thought Nylander and Tavares had a chance to score, and yeah. Nyes was faster and better than Pacioretty. Optically, you think, oh, that's the first line. And I think maybe in Brube's mind at that point, the Nylander line was the best line. That if anyone was going to score in that game, it was Nylander. That's why I think he added Nyes there.
Hey, you know who's been the best line of this series is the Nylander line. So it's like no one would debate that. No one would refute that. I honestly, at this point, to me, I don't understand why you wouldn't get really aggressive with it. I know you haven't played, like, Scott Laughton doesn't have a goal in the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? He does not look like an overwhelmingly strong offensive player. I don't care. I would be putting somebody like him with Marner. I'd be mixing in my bottom six and saying, hey, we've got to get a completely different look here. I kind of think that Nylander and Tavares have sort of earned the benefit of the doubt to stick together. It's the other guys that would be splitting up. I'd be looking for Domi to play with Matthews, even if, I don't know, there's some sort of indication that maybe he doesn't play because of the penalties. I'll put it this way. I was talking to Myrtle yesterday, and then I started texting some other people about this and seeing like, oh, this is an interesting kind of note about Domi. The frustrations with him seem to not just be with the coach and the penalties. They seem to be like within the organization right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a horrible season. They gave him the richest contract of his life. They gave him a lot of term, and he's under-delivered. And then, you know, I think he's 11 penalties in the postseason. He's taken at least – he's averaged more than one a game in this series when things are really important. And maybe you could argue about one or two of them. Most you can't. Most are behind the play, or it's revenge stuff or sick stuff. It's not – you know, it's not checking stuff. It's not preventing a goal stuff. It's and like penalties at this time get amplified as like to a ridiculous degree. And Toronto's losing the special team battle in quite severely in this series. So every penalty costs. And, you know, I like Steve Simmons actually asked Brube straight up, like, how do you continue to dress this guy with all the unnecessary penalties he's taking? And he's like, oh, something we'll talk about. He didn't dismiss it, but there was other times during the season to help he scratch Domi and send a message to him. Like, he had really prolonged slumps, and it was kind of curious why he kept getting in. And I just think it's veteran guy. He's paid, I think, fifth most amongst forwards, and just kind of they view him as something pretty close to the core. So he never scratched him. So it'd be kind of surprising for his first scratch under Berube to be when they're, you know, facing elimination.
I was almost frustrated seeing some of the lineup changes, even though I thought they were necessary, just because they actually absorbed some of the conversation. And I went, listen, I know they're right. supposed to be a team, right? They're, hey, it's not all on two guys. Hey, it's not supposed to all be on the core four. And God, how many times has this organization tried to reiterate that message? Or they're like, it's not just the core four, okay, guys? We're like, yeah, but they're the ones that are always here, so it's hard to not think about it. And they're the thing that you built the team around, so it's hard not to look at that primarily. But yeah, they make those lineup adjustments, right, where they bring in, they take out Holmberg. Who was the other scratch? It was Holmberg and...
Jarnkrok.
Those two guys sit. They put in Robertson, who ends up, you know, my guy, scratch and score. He finds a way to the back of the net, despite it being in the funniest way possible, which is the very end of the game, and it's a completely useless goal. But so if there is a lineup change, is that your expectation? Like, hey, they're either doing nothing and running this back entirely the same, or it's Domi. Like, he's actually the one bubble guy more so than anybody else?
Maybe he is. McMahon, I don't know. I like McMahon, but
yeah, hard to think.
He's going on 23 games without a goal. He hasn't made an impact in the playoffs. Berube's a Holmberg guy, so I could see Holmberg getting back in.
But, yeah, I was surprised he was scratched.
Yeah, but all this is
immaterial.
It's so yeah, it really is. It's kind of funny, like. We're not going to look back at this as the camp and yard crock years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think so either. Yeah. And there was a period of time where this was done, right? Where we talked about this, like, hey, they can't have Alex Kerfoot out here. Like, this is the problem. The problem is no secondary scoring. And to a degree that remains true, right? I think that if you are doing the blame pie, you should be able to bring up things like, hey, the McMahon's being a 20-goal scorer in the regular season and then producing no offense essentially in the playoffs, that's a noteworthy thing, especially when you're evaluating your group moving forward. But yeah, it's not the main thing. The main thing is clear. It's very obvious, and it lies with these guys. So I'll get back into them for a second before I move on to some other stuff and kind of sprinkle it in.
Just one second, though, JD. Like yeah. they had a big goal from Simon Benoit. They had a huge moment from Max Pacioretty. Like they have had these flashes usually mark, their blue line contributions have gone way up offensively. Like they have had these moments in this postseason that, you know, teams that win the cup, they point like, oh, remember in this round, this guy, no one talked about it, stood up. Like they have already had some of those moments.
I totally agree. Luke, when I've been describing this team, so again, I try to interact with people as much as possible. And after that loss, so many people sent me the same message of, and we thought this team was different. We thought this team was different. Oh, they're not different. Oh, isn't it so funny that people said the Leafs are different? And my argument has been the same, and it will remain the same. And it's the number one case in terms of finally being okay. Like, who's okay with the idea of letting a player of Mitch Marner's caliber walk in free agency? No one. Like, no one likes that in sports. That's the worst thing that can kind of happen to you, is you feel like, oh, what? This guy left? I remember how it felt for the Raptors when they lost Chris Bosch to free agency just for nothing. And you went, yeah, it was clearly done here, but my God, to not get an asset back, devastating for this organization. How many years is it going to take to recover from this? Losing Mitch Marner.
Talk about Hyman.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Exactly right. So to lose a guy that played on Team Canada's top line, you would think would be like universally everyone is against. And it's gotten to the point where it's almost universal that people are like, no, you got to do it. Thank God Marner was the one that stepped in here and said, hey, you would have loved if he waived the no move and accepted a deal for Rantanen. But barring that, he potentially saved this organization from what could have been one of their biggest mistakes in the entirety of all of this, in the entirety of 9 seasons. Could you imagine Mitch Marner was extended for 8 years and we were watching this postseason series? And hell, maybe it's different. Maybe again, sliding doors, he looks a little bit more invested in this thing. But to get back to the argument, I've made this case. The team is different. They have gotten that secondary scoring. The blue line has been better. Morgan Riley still has the same amount of combined goals as Marner and Matthews. Like, That's not good. That's really bad. They've played 11 playoff games. He shouldn't have as many goals as both of those guys as a player who, yeah, really struggled to score this season. So, no, I don't accept any of that. I think that their goaltending has been fine. I think that their blue line has been amazing. I think that their secondary contributions, yes, maybe they haven't come from McMahon, but they end up coming from a guy like Pacioretty or even, yeah, the Benoit goal, the Domi goal, whatever. Like, pick a player. Some of these guys have impact. The frustrating thing is that it maybe has never looked worse for these guys. Like, I don't think that there's been a playoff game that Matthews and Marner looked worse together than game 5 against Florida. And that's what sputtered people out in this thing. It wasn't just a normal loss. It was like, oh my God, there wasn't even a case that people could make about the analytics and about the defense and about anything. It's like the first period of that game, you got outchanced 11-1 and a puck ended up in the back of your net. And to kind of dig in on the Marner thing now specifically, he makes that pass and he doesn't back check. But the thing that got overlooked to me by a lot of people, and I didn't even bring it up in Leafs talk, was his body language after the goal. Go run that look, go run that back for anybody that's listening to this right now, as painful as it may be to go watch that goal. Go look at the body language and go tell me that that looks like a guy who is invested in this group. And I got to tell you, man, you're seeing Kipper talk about it. Myrtle's talking about it. It's been an underlying current all along, especially when, again, they tried to sign him to an extension and he was still unwilling to do it. The fact that this organization has been frustrated with where they're at with him for now a full calendar year, maybe two. And the sense that I'm getting is that when you're watching him, this is a guy with one foot out the door. And when you're a team and one of your top guys does not look like he's fully committed, it's hard not to let that impact you in some way.
Yeah. When the guy's wearing a letter and the sense is he's checked out, or he gets asked if he wants, envisions himself being here. And it's like, well, we'll see. Let's play hockey. You know, it's not,
I'm not thinking about that right now. You know, who would be thinking about it is your teammates in quiet moments when they're around you.
Sure. Sure. I don't know if they think about it as much as us on the outside do, because I do really think they're thinking like, okay, I got to stretch, I got to lift these weights, I got to get to the bus.
Sure. But
like they live a different way, and they really do try to live in the moment and shift to shift. And it's such a cliche, but that is how they are trying to train their minds to live. But I think they feel it. I think they feel the body language and the, I'm not angry that we're losing, I'm feeling sorry for myself because I made a mistake. I think they feel that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I get that they try to compartmentalize, and I understand that in a game, I don't think they're thinking about that at all, right?
Like,
I don't think that when they put their skates on the ice, that there is anything they're thinking about other than the game itself and the matchup and what they're trying to accomplish. Certainly, certainly, certainly. But yeah, the brain works in weird ways, and you do have a subconscious. And if you are like, okay, Marner's not their boss, so this is kind of not a perfect analogy. But if you have a boss who you really like, right, you work well with, or somebody at work that you work really well with, and you're aware that they might take a position somewhere else, right? You have a co-host on a show, you know, you've got a cameraman that you work with, that you adore, a producer that you work with, that you adore, and you're aware of the idea that there's potential that they're not coming back with you next year. Yeah, it kind of impacts the relationship a bit. It impacts your thinking. Like, I know that, you know, we once had somebody like a higher up that worked here that I was a huge fan of. And I remember hearing that he had left or that he was thinking about leaving. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to like really impact what my future looks like. And yeah, I can't help but think that it doesn't at least have some sort of effect on the day to day, or it doesn't have some sort of effect on the group. And to your point about like wearing the letter, okay, some of that stuff is ceremonial. Not every single person who's worn a captain or a C or an A has been like the galvanizing player in a group, but it's kind of hard when your leadership structure is built around a certain guy that, yeah, and your team is built around a certain guy, and they're looking around the room and there's no like, hey, we have to win this. We need to win this. This is not acceptable. And you go into the end of the game and the body language in the comments kind of utters like, hey, flush it. It is what it is. Like Chris Tanev is the guy that's trying to take accountability for this in year one. Don't love it.
Because Chris Tanev, understands. He gets it. He's mature.
Yeah.
You know, he's been on multiple teams. He's lived through multiple scenarios. He's had success. He's had disappointments. He's seen different leadership groups. And he's just a, what you see is what you get. You know, he's, you know, sometimes I think that with some of the leaders, it's just, let's just get through this scrum with the media and get on with my day. Whereas Chris, I really feel like when you're talking to Chris, you're talking to Chris, and he'll give you an honest answer. He'll
it's like Muzzin.
Question and what's that?
It's like Muzzin. Like
Muzzin? Yeah. That's a good example. Yep.
Yeah, it was just like that's it just reminds me of just how many years, like the more it's different, the more it is the same, where they brought in a guy with pedigree who is so important to the team. And I think Chris Tanev is better than even Muzzin was when he was here. But it's like, why is it that the guy who was brought in from another organization, who immediately becomes one of the most important voices in your room, that is the one talking about accountability, talking about the things that it takes to win, and seems like the most frustrated out of all of you when they're not attached to anything from the past? Like, it's very weird, man. It's very weird that it has continued to kind of be this way.
Yeah, Giordano was like that for a bit too. Yeah.
I'll just say this stat, but it's like 8 playoff goals in the last 6 games for Mikko Rantanen and 7 playoff goals for Mitch Marner in the last 6 years. So
I saw that one going around. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's fine. It's totally fine.
Yeah,
so
damning stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not great. That's not the kind of stat that you want to see. But again,
it shows you that Trey Living saw this, right? The fact he tried to make that trade. We were talking sliding doors moments. Really, it was the Shanahan Dubas split, because I think Dubas had reached the point where he was going to maybe move Marner before the no move kicked in. But once all those clauses kicked in, then Trey Living's hands were tied, unless maybe in the summer he could have went really aggressive and ugly and made it uncomfortable, you know, publicly, and tried to force Marner to waive. Like, that would, I guess, be the only way. But, you know, and I don't blame the players and their agents for getting protection. I mean, well, get whatever you can get. That's all fair in negotiation. But that seems to be the time when Dubas may have broken up the core. He felt like, because he gave that press conference, he said, like, you know, we're knocking at the door, but maybe there comes a time where we have to take a different approach or something along those lines, he said. And that was the first inclination where they strayed from that. Nope, always bet on talent. We're going to break through eventually. That was the first offseason where they seemed to drift from that.
So we're kind of doing a bit of the eulogy show now before, like, the die is completely cast. But I will say
it's unfair. They can win 2 games.
I know. But just to that point, I do think that there is extreme irony in a large section of the fan base that was dubious of Dubas, right, that did not want Dubas around for a very long time, was calling for his firing. And then finally, when he does get the firing, it's actually in this moment where, and I don't know if he would have built the team any better. Like, I think Tree Living has done an excellent job with the blue line. He signed Stolarz, which was, I think, the signing of the offseason. Like, very arguably, the signing of the offseason was getting Anthony Stolarz on a 2-year deal that pays him, what, $2.5 million or $3 million a season? Like, it's an incredible steal for that level of play and that talent that he's been at that money and at that term. But yeah, it's like you finally get rid of this guy that you don't think is it. And it was actually in the one moment, and all of a sudden Brendan Shanahan is calling everybody in the core saying, don't worry, you're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. Like, I got you. And they're trying to stabilize the organization desperately. And it started with those dudes. And it's like, God, as if this broke against you in this particular fashion. Okay. So back into this. It's been widely noted now that Tanev is the most hit player in the postseason. He has received the most checks. And Florida, again, so much of this is like, we're very Toronto-centric, so we probably don't give them enough credit, to your point at the very beginning of the show. Like, again, they're a very, very good team. And if this was a normal circumstance where it was like year two of a different team and Toronto was losing the series in this way, there wouldn't be this much consternation about, you know, the identity and what's moving forward and pre-eulogizing all this different stuff. But their forecheck has just been really noteworthy these last few games, of just wave after wave after wave of dump and chase and just nailing guys and finishing their checks. And I'm curious if you think that one of the things that's happened here is that the Leafs are starting to look a little worn down.
100%. And that's Florida's plan. Like, set the tone in the first 2 to 3 games where you just punish the team as hard as you can. You try to muck it up, try to make it a dirty, greasy series. And then when it comes to finishing the job, then your discipline kicks in. You're still hitting hard, and all those hits have taken their toll. So the guys are a little bruised. They're looking over their shoulder. There was a couple moments in that game where I saw guys, you know, not go through them, you know, just make a bit of a scared play or a hurt play, whatever it is. Like, they take the war of attrition theory very seriously, and they're really good at it. Like, it's hard to argue with it. And the scary thing is that they're healthy. Like, the Leafs are, quote-unquote, fully healthy. They don't, outside of the goalie, which is a big deal, but outside of the goalie, like, all their guys are healthy. They have all their players, all their stars, but Florida has worn them down. And, you know, Toronto's physical, but I think for sure the forecheck is taking a toll, particularly on Tanev. I mean, he was a -3. And that was pretty uncharacteristic. I mean, it's not all his fault. It's the forward giveaways too. But he didn't have a great game. That was his first bad game. And not only is Tanev taking the most hits, Leafs defenseman, last I checked, had 5 of the top 10 most hit. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty significant number. And it's listen, I don't think that anyone on the Leafs played well in game 5. Like, there's no one that you point to and say, well, this, like, yeah, Nylander had some chances, and I thought Tavares was at least giving an effort. But, yeah, there's nobody that you would look at and go, well, you know, they really let down this player who was really going. So Tanev's a part of it as well. He's not completely blameless in this. He's not the guy that should be standing up in front of the entire media and saying, this is all on me when I'm a -3, we can't win. Like, yeah, okay. I don't think you shoveled the puck into Barkov, right, in front of the net, was able to slide it over to, I think it was Verhaeghe who scored the first goal, right? Where it was like, bing, it's in the back of the net.
Ekblad got the first goal.
It was Ekblad pinching down. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, hard to make you complicit on that one. But I get it. I get the overall sentiment. Okay, so last thing for me. When we spoke during the Ottawa series, there was a renewed energy in the room. And we had talked about this, where you were like, hey, they're up. I think they were up 2 or 3-0. And you mentioned how there was like this business-like, workman-like attitude to them that felt like a huge departure from years past. And I've always talked about collective trauma and what that ends up doing to a group when things get tough, which is, hey, do you start to look like your same old selves? Do you revert to your same old habits? And I'm curious, just in terms of the general atmosphere that you are in right now in that dressing room, because yes, obviously there's a different measure of people being angry and the questions starting to tilt and starting to be more about losses than things that are positive. But is that same business-like approach that you thought was there during the Ottawa series here during the Florida series?
Well, the coach feels the same. You know, his temper, he's still steady, and it's like, it's kind of wild to me, you know, how he has stuck with the same line of commentary. And in terms of the star players in particular, like, really careful not to throw them under the bus. It's all of us. We're a team. Like, so his approach hasn't changed. His demeanor hasn't changed one iota, even though they're losing now. But there's a tightness now. And I think it's just they're coming face-to-face with the realization that Florida might be a better hockey team. And this is 2 bad performances in a row. You can flip that and say, hey, they're much better than they've showed the last 2 games. So that's optimistic. Like, Florida didn't beat us at our best. They beat us at our worst. So hopefully that's something they can cling to. But I don't know if you watched Morgan Riley's availability with the reporters yesterday before they flew. He looked down.
Don't love that. Don't love it. Do not love it. Luke Fox, again, senior writer for Sportsnet. Thanks for making time as always, buddy. Enjoy the game tonight.
Okay.
Say
thanks, JD.
Yeah, series is not over. I know that it sounds that way, and I promise I will do more matchup and expectation in terms of strategy with Jason Bukla in a few minutes. Again, a former director of amateur scouting, has a scouting eye. I want to see or hear how he's seeing things. It's just, yeah, it's tough when there are a lot of markers and they're in this position. And you've seen so much of it before to just dismiss that past and just say, well, it's all new. It's like, ah, but is it though? They got the chance again to prove everybody wrong. Like, I think that Marner looks like a guy with one foot out the door and that there is not a scenario in which he is back realistically. But prove me wrong that you actually deeply care about remaining a Toronto Maple Leaf and winning and seeing it through with this team, and that you are going to be a part of willing your group into a victory here. Tonight, it's weird because I don't think that if they lose, there's obviously going to be massive changes. Marner at the top of that pile. And style points don't really matter. But if they go out tonight and just lay down, right? If they're just awful, then there is a part of me that goes, maybe the cuts go a little bit deeper than what are already going to end up likely being some fairly deep cuts. And I know that people have been a little surprised in the past at how reluctant they have been to do big changes. And some of that now is seemingly coming out of their control. They wouldn't have even done it, but it would have to affect you a little differently as evaluators of this team. If you have what you saw in game 5 happen in game 6 and go, ooh, okay, so how much are you running back? Anyways, you can reach out anytime on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Like I said, I always like the feedback. I always like trying to interact with people. I've gotten a lot of very good messages. We'll take a quick break, and I want to talk about my number one Blue Jay frustration right now. That's next. So I mentioned that my most disappointing Blue Jay the other day when Armin asked me was Anthony Santander. And in vintage Ennis fashion, he's like contrarian with me. He heard it and he's like, he's having good approach. He's having good at bats. He's blah, 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 blah. And yeah, I'll call out Ben because I'll have him on the show. And anything I'd say on here, I'll say to his face. And I have said to his face. In fact, I texted him twice last night going, great process during Santander at bats. Yeah, he's not the only reason that the Blue Jays lost. Kevin Gausman, very weird performance where it's like, he either looks elite or he's given up meatballs that are going over the fence. I don't get it. I don't understand this Gausman season. I don't. And he's been largely fine, but like you see the ace stuff there and then the home runs. And I will say that one of the things that's probably been overlooked just a touch in everything that's transpired with the season is how, yeah, the staff is okay. Bassett's been really good. But it kind of feels like they've got three number threes and then two guys, and we'll see what Bowden Francis does tonight. It's on Sportsnet 590 at 7 o'clock. The Leafs game, by the way, is at 8, and it's on 680 News if you're listening on the radio, on Sportsnet, obviously, if you're watching on television. But yeah, that the pitching staff, it doesn't have that one guy that you're like, oh yeah, he's going tonight. And they used to have that. Gausman and Berríos have had flashes of being that guy where you're like, okay, good. He's on the bump tonight. All right. Anyways, this isn't about them. This is a Santander thing. 0 for 4 again last night. 5 runners left on base. Came up in a couple of huge spots. I will give him credit. He did just miss a home run. But okay, is this what we're doing right now? Is this how we're evaluating the guy that they brought in here to drive in runners to hit in the three hole? We're now on at what? Halfway through May? It's the 16th today, I want to say. And he's got an OPS of 582. He's got an OPS plus of 65. He's got a WAR on Baseball Reference of minus 0.7. We get it. Slow starter. People give you a lot of grace. Probably time to start driving in some runs, buddy. Yeah, 5 home runs on a team with not a lot of home run hitters kind of looks like, okay, it's fine, but yeah, 16 RBI. Eesh. And now I got to tell you, it's run to a point where the way that Kirk is going, yeah, you never love his base running. And Springer wasn't good yesterday either. He ended up with leaving four on base. But it's like, are they bumping him down the lineup to switch hitter? That they signed for power to drive in runs? Yeah, it's, you don't want to overreact. You don't want, it's a sample size. Blah, 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 blah. It's May 16th. How much longer until you start to look like a more threatening player at the dish? How many more times can you, again, ground into a double play in a huge spot against Zach Littell, who stinks, by the way, and somehow survived going, what, eight? No, seven in the third? I can't remember when he got the hook yesterday. It was in the eighth inning. But the Santander story is becoming louder for me. It's muted because of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's muted because sample size. It's muted because this is a little piece of advice for some other people. He did end up taking a contract that was more team friendly. And part of that, you go, well, maybe there was a reason for that. Maybe some of these teams are looking at it and saying no because of this. Either way, what can the Leafs do differently? What does Jason Buchla expect? That's next. Listen, for those of you that are online too much, that corgi that shoots hoops to predict hockey series did predict it exactly the way that the series has gone so far. And he did shoot games 6 and 7 in for the Leafs. So hold on to that. Legacy-defining weekend for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Really? Yeah, there's going to be time for all these guys to dictate how exactly they're remembered, potentially in other markets, or just the way that we evaluate their entirety of their career. But yeah, for this core in general, for this iteration of the team, 9 seasons in, given the contract status of Marner, given the contract status of Tavares, given the... Like, this is the first time I can remember where the fan base really does feel like they're all on the same page when it comes to the way they feel about this strategy. Like, that has been, I don't think, a frustration in years past. But it was tougher when you had half the fans going, hey, it's bad bounces, it's bad breaks, kind of reiterating some of the stuff that these players do when it doesn't go their way, right? They were snake bit. Oh, they got goalied, all this different stuff. And half of the fan base going, no, this has to change. You got to get, okay, sure. Are you going to win the trade in terms of getting the most talented player back? No, but you've got to do something different. No, you got to do something different. No, after this. Again, now it's 9, but we were talking after Montreal. We were talking after Columbus. We were certainly talking after the first Tampa Bay loss. Definitely speaking last year after the Boston loss, like, it's been a lot of these, but this is the first time that it's felt this harmonious in terms of what would have to change. So yeah, the legacy as a group is defined by what ends up happening here, barring some kind of a shocking outcome, which to me would do so much damage to the long-term business of this franchise. Like, I think that if you were to say, hey, this is all coming back the same after what we saw in Game 5, and if it continues to go this way, yeah, the jerseys that get thrown on the ice are actually going to result in people leaving. I always joke that people are saying, I'm done, I'm not a Leaf anymore. It's like, yes, you are. You're going to be back. I'm going to see that same person in my mentions in a couple of months. See you in a couple of months. It's just the way you deal with it. It's the way you handle it. Get it. And then here you are with an opportunity that so many athletes crave. I said this on a show the other day. Athletes love proving people wrong. They love being able to stick it in the face of the haters, as they say. Man, the Edmonton Oilers, this is their social media team. This isn't their players, but I don't know. They had this post the other day of, hey, the haters who said we would lose to the Kings, and they put it out there with a meme. That's sports. You get doubted and you come through. And you stick it to people. And you say, ha, you don't know me. You don't know what I can do. So good luck to them, honestly. Nobody believes in you. Everybody's written you off, and you still have time to change that. Will you? I doubt it. I'll be one of those people that you get to stick it in their face and say, ha, 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 idiot. You thought that they were quitting on them. You thought that Marner had 1 foot out the door. You had all those different takes. Look at you go now. Look at you go now, having to talk about the third round. Sure. Welcome it. Would love it. Have my actual career tied to it in a way where it would be very positive to me. So I'm really rooting for it, in case that isn't clear and obvious. But yeah, this is the weekend, man. This is the weekend. Jason Buchla, former director of amateur scouting for the Florida Panthers. He joins me now. What's up, Books? How we doing, brother?
Good morning, buddy. I'm doing okay. Yeah. Well said. I was digesting all that, and I'm with you. I can tell you from a hockey operations perspective, behind the scenes that the conversation would have already been had. You always regurgitate your year in before your exit meetings at the end of the season. You try and take the good and the bad, and you take a couple of days to reset, because your recency bias obviously can.
Yep.
Can dictate a lot of emotion, you know, or it contains a lot of emotion. But I'm with the fan base at this point in time as a hockey executive, and that is that this is a franchise that's gone through this for an extended period of time, not just a little while. This is a long time. And mm-hmm. when I was in Florida for 10 years, and mm-hmm. we inherited with Dale Tallon an opportunity to build it from the grassroots up. And then what we handed off to Bill Zito when we, you know, the upper echelon of us got let go and they turned over a new leaf there, we handed over to him a plethora of assets that either he was going to use to continue, just kind of stand pat, if you will, or he was going to build or add a few different things in his own type of vision. And the core guys are obviously there, the Barkovs, the Ekblads, the Bobrovskis, even Lundell in our last year of the draft. And but what he did was he made some really creative decisions and took some risk. And now we're at the point with the Toronto Maple Leafs that Brad Tree Living hasn't had he wasn't afforded the luxury from Kyle Dubas and his staff. He wasn't left a lot of assets. So there's no draft capital. There wasn't anything on the horizon, JD. And so you're left with what you have, and you keep your fingers crossed that this is going to work. Otherwise you have to trade out one of those big name guys, if you will, and to hope that it works. But now I'm at the point where I'm honestly, if things go south tonight, and I've talked to some of my ex-colleagues in Florida, and I'm sure you can connect the dots, and boy, oh boy, are they excited. They've never felt better about themselves. They feel like they're going to go on an extended run here, not just this weekend, like an extended run potentially to back-to-back cups. So I'm going on a little bit here, but it's time to get very, very aggressive. That's my take. I'm talking very aggressive. And I'll end it with this. The closest Toronto Maple Leaf to – there's probably two or three of them, but up front in the forward group, the closest guy to playing a Florida Panther style of hockey, and we all agree that it looks like it's – we already know that it's a nice style to play at this time of year. It reaps rewards. Is Matthew Nyes. Like, if you put Matthew Nyes in a Florida Panther uniform, honestly, mm-hmm. put that jersey on him, doesn't he just fit right into that lineup the way that he plays the game? In my opinion, he does. And that says something. So we'll see where this goes tonight. Obviously, I want them to win. I'm a homer. I'm a Canadian. I want this to work. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if it doesn't, which I'm totally prepared for, it's time to make some very aggressive, outside-the-box types of decisions.
So when we're talking about the fan base mentality, this is one of the worst places you can be if you are a executive of the Toronto Maple Leafs, if you are someone in the higher levels of MLSE, which is, so I leave my like Instagram DMs open, Books. So I get like, I solicit a lot of people sending me stuff, right? And one of the most common things that a person has sent me over the last 2 to 3 days is, hey, this is a win-win. Either they win and we get to root for the team, or they lose, and my expectation is that those changes come and I get a measure of relief. Like, How many fan bases can you say that about in all of professional sports where the loss is actually not devastating because you're so sick of the product, you're so sick of the same thing over and over again that you've become like, yeah, all right, they lose, it's fine. You know, we got mad about game five because they looked that way. We got mad because there's all these other underlying things that have happened and the way that some of the stars looked and the just complete beatdown that was in front of your home fans was embarrassing. You got to deal with other fan bases calling at you. But today, in the light of a new day, it's going to be all right because ultimately this will be the end of what has been one of the most talented, if not, you know, this is the most talented group they had in the salary cap era. There's just no question about it. They went all in. They maximized assets, right? They put in multiple draft picks. The last team that was this talented was the year that they went out and got Brian Leetch and Owen Nolan, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. That's the team that you can compare these guys to from a talent standpoint, period. Nothing else. So for a franchise that has not won since 1967, that is just known for torture, is looking at the most talented team they've ever had and saying, we're fine with changes. We're fine with losing some of that talent for nothing. That's how beaten down people are here. That's a level of low that you're not supposed to expect with a normal fan base. So yes, I understand it. Now, back to the conversations that you're having with the Florida people. How much of how, because, okay, you're feeling good for a reason. It's like, no offense to Carolina, but that's not the Florida Panthers that's waiting for you. This was supposed to be your toughest challenge, and now you're, you know, beating their brains out in the last three games. It's like the last two specifically have been very heavily tilted in Florida's favor. But in these conversations with people, how much of this is like their confidence that they've just broken the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, for sure it's that. They anticipated to a man the fragility of this going in. And what it, when they lost the first two games and they didn't panic and they went home and listen, to be honest with you, they can say whatever they want to say to me. They were panicking when it was an overtime game. Like there was a sense
of, how could you not?
How could you not? It's human nature. But now having them over the barrel the way they do, here's one of the interesting takeaways from some of the people I've talked to. And that is that the Leafs had an extended break to get to Wednesday. Okay, they had an extended break to, like, the extra day off to reset, you know, ice bags on Tana, whatever it was. You understand what I mean? Reset, get yourself ready, make some lineup changes if you chose to, and they did. But more importantly, it just gives them an extra day of reprieve from what is the relentless attack from the Florida Panthers. And how did that look? Where did that go for them? Nowhere, right? So now they travel, they go down there. Two different types of plane rides all together getting to South Florida for tonight's game. They really think that they've just, between the ears, they feel like they've worn them out. Physically, they definitely feel like they have taken their legs out of their game. And then beyond that, again, if we don't want to speak to the human nature aspect, this is outside of the opponent's control. The opponent, they wear you down, they do all these things. But then what it does to you as an individual is it tests you inside. It tests your internal will and your perseverance. And now they're gripping their stick tighter or they're just not taking advantage. It's a speed wobble with the puck off your, you know, it's the worst version of an athlete comes through when they're under immense pressure. And sometimes that doesn't even have anything to do with your opponent. They've just pushed you into that corner. It's like a boxing match and you're stuck in the corner. Mm-hmm. They push you into that area and you can't get out. You have no idea how to get out of it. And that's how they feel. They feel really good. Now, listen, it could be a bounce here, a bounce there. Something could happen. Yeah. It's sports.
Yeah, of course.
Man. Like anything could happen. Yeah. But we brought Bobrovsky in, JD, when I was there, and there was good Bob, bad Bob, different days. And as you know, when I'm getting frustrated, I'm blowing up you, Sammy, and Borny on my text. I'm just like you, right? Like, so like I'm getting frustrated when he is fast twitching and he's outside the box, outside the post, kind of like Samsonov was when he was in Toronto, when he's fast twitching too much, you know, he lets some leaky goals in under pads, under gloves, like through his arms, stuff like that. But when he's on time with his athleticism and he gets dialed in, boy, oh boy, is he ever good. And he is the best version of himself right now. And believe it or not, that goal that he allowed off Robertson late in the game the other night to not get pitch a shutout, he is even more motivated tonight to get it done. That was actually the worst thing that could have happened to the Toronto Maple Leafs. It would have been better for him to pitch a shutout, and now he's going to take that motivation to another level. That sounds crazy, but trust me, I've been there.
I hate you for saying that. Like, the one thing that people were going, hey, at least you don't like have to have the Bobrovsky shutout streak, and at least these Leaf players are able to think to themselves, hey, we weren't shut out. Hey, we were able to beat the guy. He is human. I've used this analogy before, but there's that movie 300, and at the very end, Leonidas throws the spear at Xerxes, and he cuts him. And that's why the Spartans win, because they find out that, hey, this guy is not a god. And now his people have doubt because the guy is not a god. He bled. Gods don't bleed. And that's the kind of thinking that you were supposed to be able to put into your head when it came to scoring that goal. And now you're telling me that that's not even working for them. So anyway, what do you think can work for them? Like, when you're looking at this tonight and saying, all right, they had those first two games. God, they had those, I think, first seven periods, right? Because the first period of game three, the Leafs were incredible. Like, it opens up with just two goals, bang, bang. All of a sudden, Tavares is wrapping around the net and burying one on Bobrovsky, and Leaf Nation is going nuts. What are you looking for from Toronto tonight that is going to tell you, hey, you know what? They're on their game.
Yeah, so being on the road, I think, is provides an opportunity to be away from a lot of the noise. The noise is there, but they're down in Florida, and they're not waking up in Toronto. Some of them walk to the rink, as you know. They're not having to walk down Bay Street to get towards the, you know, Scotiabank. What this does for them today is it provides an opportunity to play as free as you possibly can, given the circumstances. So if I'm the top six, and if I'm the Bobby McMahons, the Matthew Nyes, I'm getting myself involved physically right off the drop of the puck. Pucks are in deep, and it's like hammer time for sure. And then the other guys are going to have to be in puck support roles to get on it and pounce. There's no doubt about the fact that some of their muscle that they do have, admittedly, they do have it, right? They're not shying away from contact here. They're just getting outplayed. The big boys, though, you know, Nylander can't just be waiting to pounce in the neutral zone. But what if he does? Like, maybe things look different the other night if he scores. They're getting badly outplayed in the first period. Maybe it looks a little bit differently if he scores on that breakaway. I don't know. Like, maybe.
Buddy, there's a bunch of breakaways in the series where it's like, God, if Nyes buries on that one in game three, like, Nylander gets that, you know, big-time sliding door breakaways.
Yeah, even Nyes the other night, you know, the game was obviously trending in a negative direction, but, you know, power to the net. So playing with the lead, if they are fortunate enough to get off to a really quick start to catch the Panthers napping a bit, and they're obviously motivated from the drop of the puck, if they play with the lead early, they got to dummy it down. They got to play they got to clog it up, and they got to play with detail. No more backhand sauces up the middle of the night. They got, or up the middle of the ice. It's got to be outside the dots all night long. Stupid, boring, physical hockey. Grind it out. Give your goaltender the best chance to field pucks from the perimeter. And I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. This isn't rocket science at this time of the year. But the will has got to be greater than the skill, JD. The will has got to be greater than the skill. I don't care about the skill. I do care about the skill. I'll take that back. I love the skill. But without the will, the skill doesn't matter. And you've heard me say it. How many times have you heard me say it? I always say to people, the B game, the B game, the B game, because the game of in the NHL is hard. You're not going to score every day. You're not going to be dipsy dueling with the puck and, you know, going through skates and under sticks and getting free lanes to the net. It's a hard, hard league. So your B game, which is will and hockey sense and execution to dummy things down, that has to rise. And if you're not capable of that, the will game to rise, then we got a huge problem. We just won't win. And then that's where I get to my offseason eulogy at that point.
Yeah. So you said you still care about the skill. I don't. And I'll tell you right now, I don't think that the fan base does either. You know what, the common theme has been? Show that you care. Everybody knows their skill, Books. Like, nobody's doubting the skill of any of these players. They're certainly not doubting the skill of a guy who scored 69 goals in an NHL season. They're not doubting the skills of a guy who got put on the first line of Team Canada at the Four Nations, who had just is coming off of a 100-point season. Like, those things aren't up for debate. They're skilled. They're incredibly skilled. They're the most skilled players this organization has ever had, period. It's the will. All people want right now. Again, this is the bar. This is how pathetic it is. This is the bar, Books. Care. Yep. Show you care. I got some of the most depressing messages ever. I had one guy who's like, JD, why don't they care? I'm like, Jesus. You know, like, there's, if these players had a fraction of the care that the fan base has with this skill, we'd be talking about multiple cups. We'd be talking about dynasty level stuff. And that's the issue here is people, even if you do care, the way that you don't, the way that you show it with your play does not translate to the people that are watching you. It just doesn't. And you need to be able to do that tonight. Like, yeah, obviously you got to get the win and that's any way possible for sure. But to change people's minds about who you are and what you can accomplish as a group, that's going to only come through one way, and that's the will.
Yeah, no, 100%. That's exactly it. When I'm talking about the skill, it's because when you play with more will, then hopefully your skill rises in the hardest games, right? You know, like, it's just the reality of it. Listen, I'm old school, right? I'm 54 years old, pal. Like, I came through the Doug Gilmore era. I came through even the Matt Sundin era, and when these guys get in front of cameras, that group back then, let me put it to you even just more recently on the West Coast. The Edmonton Oilers eliminate the Vegas Golden Knights. And Connor McDavid, who's the best player in the world, gets in front of the camera and he takes one question. He's looking at him going like, he gets pissy about it. You know what I mean?
He was so grumpy.
He was grumpy. And it's because, two things, job's not done. Yeah. I'm tired of listening to people not believing us in certain categories, but flip the script. Like the other night, Chris Tanev gets out front of the camera. I know this, I'm regurgitating things you've already gone through, and I'm trying to put myself in as positive a mindset as possible going in tonight. I really am. But Chris Tanev gets out, he's blocking shots. Even McCabe blocked one with his face that they ended up scoring a goal on. Like, these guys give everything they have, and they take the full brunt of their responsibility while some of these other guys get out there. So that's what I mean. They don't take enough. Prove it to me. Now, how are they going to do that in the next 48 hours or what, 72 hours? Are they going to be able to do that? Honestly, pal, I'm not selling my firstborn to deal for to think that that's going to be happening here. I'm sitting right on the fence, but I'm going to tell you something. If we regroup out, if they lose and we regroup here after this, I'm open to a very creative conversation with you later on, because it's time. I'm staring at the Panthers salary cap management right now as I'm talking to you. Alexander Barkov makes $10 million a year. Mm-hmm. Okay? He makes $10 million a year. And, you know, between Barkov, Tkachuk, and Reinhardt, you know, they're up into that $27 million a year. So let me ask you a very simple question. If they ran this back and if you signed Marner, would you take Marner and Matthews, just the two of those guys, or would you take a combination of Barkov, Tkachuk, and Reinhardt going forward to win Stanley Cups? It's a pretty easy answer, isn't it? So we'll see what happens here.
Yeah. Listen, and even if you take – I would even take it a step further and go, all right, even at the, if you up those numbers to the Toronto numbers, right? Like, you take out the Florida no state tax and tack that on, you're still obviously doing it. Like, yeah, no question. That's the, listen, again, some of this stuff is for the eulogy show, but I don't see a realistic scenario where it makes sense for either party for Marner to return. Not for the money, not for the role, not for the history, not for all of the damage that seems to have been done between the player and the organization, which, again, I don't understand. I can't wait to dig into that during the offseason when all of this ends up happening and get all the actual nitty-gritty as to how this went south when so much was given. So whatever. Anyway, to the actual stuff for tonight with those guys, though, what does your scout's eye say when you're watching Matthews and Marner? And why it has looked so poor in these last couple of games, specifically like, man, that last game, the chances for in the first period, I'm sorry for everybody who listens to the show, but I'm telling it to you because I don't know if you know it, but the chances for were 11-1, shots were 6-0, and then obviously goals 1-0.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, the start was just abysmal, and that's why it's going to be so important to get on a roll early here tonight. So when we start talking about Matthews and excuse me, I might post, but I'm going to definitely send to you, and you can do whatever you want with it. You have to go to the hard areas, and you have to get to the inside to produce dirty goals or dirty opportunities for the good of the group at this time of year. It's just a fact. And the perimeter game from the top players on this team has been astounding. Like, it's been absolutely incredible. If you know, not only are the chances not really being generated, but from Matthews and Marner especially, when he decides to get a shot on goal, everything's from outside the dots. Everything. Playmaking's from outside the dots. Shots on goal are from outside the dots. Austin Matthews fumbling it a little bit, obviously not feeling it, but he's getting some shots on goal. But again, the quality and the region that he's getting some of these in, sometimes they're quality, not enough quality. And they don't go to, there's no second chance pucks a lot of times. Like Bobrovsky's eating the first one and that's it. It's one and done. So listen, this is where the strategy in my mind, you split up, maybe you split up that group. You know, you go way outside the box and start thinking, let's get like, look what Leon Draisaitl did there. Leon Draisaitl centered Kasperi Kapanen and Vasily Parkholzin the other night. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, let's
two fringe NHL couple, players.
Fringe. Yeah. Heavy, hard, just, role guys, right? Let's get outside the box here. Let's get a couple of guys hammering people on the wings. Let's see if it opens up some spots. Maybe you got Bobby McMahon on the right. You got Knies on the left. I don't know. Like, I'm spitballing here. But it doesn't matter if you don't want to get to the hard areas and you don't want to take the sacrifice to get it done. So Craig Berube can't program to do that tonight. They have to be able to do that on their own. And I'm hoping that it's their best game of the season. Let me rephrase that. I'm hoping it's the best game of their career because this is the last chance. Mm-hmm. This is the last chance. And you got to get down and dirty. And if you don't get down and dirty when everything is on the line, then you don't belong in this marketplace. You don't, JD. It's not for you. It's not for us. It's not for the fan base and the family that paid $3,000 for a family of four to go park their car, have a meal, go watch that the other night. It's not fair to everybody. So your highest paid players got to be your best players. And that's just the way it is.
I wish those players were a little bit more connected to that reality of the fans that
too.
Pay that money. You know, like that's the one thing that I think about in terms of the different eras, and not to get too big picture stuff here, but you know, it's never really felt that way. That connection to the base, that understanding of what it takes for people to go to Leaf games and get loud and like beyond just the, because I think if you're a player, you're thinking, oh man, stop putting all the old ghosts on us, right? Like, we weren't here from 1967 on. We were just here for the last 9 years. So we don't want to hear about the collective trauma of the fan base or all the times you've been disappointed or the Boston massacre where it's 4-1. We weren't on the team, right? It's just, it's not who we are, except for, I guess, Riley, but whatever. No, what am I saying? Anyway, it's just, I get it. I get it from that standpoint. But the part that I don't like is how it, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like they get that part of it, of what it takes financially for people to go. And when you lay an egg at home and people have decided to shell out a couple $1,000 for tickets and all of the extras that come with it, that's who you're playing for. You're playing for this city, you're playing for that sweater, but you're playing for those people that put their heart and soul and financials into your hands. And you could say, well, we didn't decide to do that. We didn't tell you to do that. It's like, yeah, but you don't feel some measure of responsibility to try to, give them an effort, an honest effort. Ugh, it makes me sick. Anyway, so Matthews, and for those of you that are already going to be like, but he's hurt. Yeah, he's taking faceoffs, he's killing penalties, and I've seen him win puck battles this postseason. And so the idea that he can't get to these tough areas, I'm not buying it. I refuse to buy it. I think that he can do what you're saying. He has the physical tools and the ability and the health to do that, to get to those spots. The question for me now to you is, do you think Marner even has the ability to get to those areas? And this game against this opponent, do you think he has that actual ability to do those things? Because when we're talking perimeter game, like after game four, Books, when they asked him about no shots in two games, he said, this is my game.
Oh, did he really? I missed that quote.
Yeah, he said, I'm getting pucks to the net. I'm trying to find sticks, but this is my game. It's like, okay. Like as in he wasn't concerned about not having a shot in two games.
Yeah. And you love to hear that if you're sitting across the room, you know, putting your gear on. Here's the thing you have to realize is that right now Florida's satisfied with I don't want to say he's a sleeping giant, but he's what he can do when he's really on. But they're satisfied at the fact that they're engaged enough on him. They're making life just miserable enough that he is mostly a non-factor. He's a non-factor, especially the other night. So guess what? If there's an uptick in his play, the Florida's locked and loaded with waves of people that will make it even harder on him. So is he going to be able to fight through those layers? I can't sit here today and tell you that I have any degree of confidence in that. I don't. And, prove me wrong. I hope this isn't personal. This isn't me not liking Mitch Marner as a hockey player, as a person or anything. It's got nothing to do with that. It's the reality that it's playoffs and we need our best players to be our best players. And I don't trust that you understand what it takes to get it done, period. I don't. So prove me wrong. Just prove me wrong. And if you don't like that statement, if it's not fair for you to hear that, then don't cash checks at $1 million a month or $14 million that you think you're going to go to. Don't cash those checks if you don't think it's fair to take some criticism that on the hardest day. That's life, JD. Like, you go to the station on any – like, there's days this year, it's a grind, right? You're not feeling good in the morning. A guest drops the ball on you. Whatever the case may be, you got to grind through it, man. We got jobs. Everybody has a job. You can't, on your hardest day, mail it in anything you do in life, period. And if that's my message to anybody that's listening right now for the next wave of young hockey players coming through, major, junior, college, minor, pro, whatever, on your hardest day, give me a reason to believe in you and show that you can do it. And if you can't do it, don't come knock on my office door looking for a raise. It doesn't work like that.
That's so perfectly said. I can't do anything else. You got to go. You got to go. I had other questions for you, but that's it. You got to go out on that high because nothing's going to get said that's better than that on this show today. Jason Buchla, again, former director of amateur scouting for the Panthers. Now works for Sportsnet. Thanks so much for making time, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Of course, pal. Have a great day. Talk to you later.
See you, man. He's right. It's unbelievably hard to get to the NHL. It takes a Herculean effort from your family, from your community, and hours and hours and hours for you as a person to hone your craft and elevate yourself to a place where you are undeniably one of the best few hundred players on the planet. It's incredible. It's an unbelievable achievement. It should never be diminished. Some have easier paths than others, but no matter what, for you to end up there is like, wow, you really did something and you should be proud of it. But the way that we evaluate sports is not, hey, did you make it? And then the end of the story, that's supposed to be the beginning. And now we are judging this part of the journey. And what most people like to see from professional athletes, people who are in that spot, is not just an appreciation for them making it, but a desire to improve upon it. We probably do too much legacy talk as media. I'm guilty of it. Of course I am. I opened the show today talking about legacy stuff. But you're never supposed to doubt the greats in terms of how badly they want it. It's a bad sign, right? It really is. It's not a good thing if you have to question if you're self-satisfied with putting together numbers and having the appearances and being there and the lifestyle versus being a great who is never satisfied. to Books's point about McDavid yesterday, I know he hasn't won a cup, but he wins a playoff round and there's like zero joy in his face. He does not care. He was in the cup final last year. He didn't go out to accept his Conn Smythe trophy because he doesn't care about the award at all. That is something that that guy has, maybe when he's old and gray and he's looking back on his career, he'll see it differently. But the fact that he's in it right now, he could care less. There's one trophy that he wants and it's a Stanley Cup. And you never have to question that. And it sucks that we have to do it with these guys, but I don't know how you couldn't. But to his point about like the job itself and you show up on your tough days, again, I think sometimes we can be dismissive of how hard the job is for these guys because they do get these massive paychecks and they do have fame. They are in this enviable spot where just about everybody would trade lives, right? Or a lot of people would want to be in their position at the very least, right? Who wouldn't want to be a professional athlete who's adored by a city and making millions of dollars and, yeah, great shape and adored by many? That's an enviable place to be, but they accomplished it. Like, they deserve the credit for that. But to his point about you show up on the job, that's what anybody can relate to. That's what anybody should be able to kind of understand. It's like every job you do, if you do it with pride, is hard. It has its challenges. And you've got to be able to show metal when those things are not going your way. And I'm this way with work, is I don't want to be around the people who are just easy to be around when things are going well. I want the people who I know I can trust when things are tough. Anybody can do it when it's easy. It's what happens when, yeah, things aren't going your way. Hey, this didn't work out for you. What's the pivot? What's the next move? Hey, can you keep your head up? Can you keep your head within it? Can you persevere? That's what it's all about. And that's why I still view this as such an opportunity for these guys, because you have a chance to do the best thing possible. Yeah, you laid an egg in game 5. Marner says flush it. I think you should probably learn from it at this point. You should probably take things away from it. I wouldn't want to flush that experience. I would want to say, all right, on to the next, but how can we be better with it? What happened? Accept responsibility and move forward with more purpose. So every single one of us that is working, even if you're not, like, you know, you're a mother, you're a brother, like, we all have our responsibilities in life. And there is this expectation that you do your best and that you give a good effort. And is everyone going to have their best day every day? No. But the idea that this is like unfair to these guys to criticize them, or, and I don't think that there's a lot of people there. Maybe this is a little bit of straw manning, but the idea that there's like too much pressure or people are too critical and this is too hard and the opponent is good and the guy is injured or whatever, it's just like enough. All the excuses are gone. Stop carrying water for professional athletes that have given you very little to celebrate in the most important moments. Demand more. You should. I guess if you don't demand anything of others around you, then fine. But if you look at it that way, it's like, yeah, you want to see these guys thrive. And you should stop being like, oh, well, this guy's hurt and this guy had this to deal with and this guy had that to deal with. It's like, yeah, they got to go out and prove it. This is what the money is for. This is what it's all about. This is what all of this has been building towards for these players for their entirety of their careers. If they identify, which they do, as hockey players, then you should identify with the ones who came before you who, quote unquote, laid it on the line for this one trophy. So here you go. Here's your opportunity tonight to prove everybody wrong and to show the world that you have the qualities that we've doubted in you, specifically those two players, for now the last, I don't know, 6 seasons. Subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Again, reach out anytime. Always like to hear from people. Always like to know what people's thoughts are going through their minds today. I've had a lot of messages the last few days. I've been trying to get through as many as I can. But before we take the break, before we take the final break, before, again, this legacy-defining weekend, we've got a backyard boost for listeners across the GTA, and it all starts with playing it safe before you dig. We're giving away a $100 home hardware gift card, thanks to our friends at Ontario One Call, to help you kick off your outdoor projects the right way. Before you plant a tree, build a fence, or put in that new pool, you've got one thing to do first, and that is click before you dig. Submit a locate request through Ontario One Call before digging for any size project. Text the code word click to dig to 590-590 right now for your chance to win $100 to Home Hardware in gift cards and make that backyard project a reality the safe way. Again, text click to dig to 590-590 for your shot to win. Standard message and data rates may apply. Last block before the legacy weekend next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, so before I ask the guys what we missed, I got to talk about my Denver Nuggets, who extend the series to a seventh game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. By far the best series of the postseason so far, unquestionably. I do wish that I got to see more of the Celtics-Knicks series, because it's been like stapled to the Toronto Maple Leafs. But there's just like, my thought is the exact same on the Denver Nuggets series as it's been for all of these games. I still think if the Thunder win that they will be NBA champions, that they will figure this out, and that Denver deserves a lot of credit for the way they've defended Oklahoma City, but they do look a little bit more vulnerable in the sense that other guys around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander are just not looking, hey, Toronto Maple Leafs parallel. There's a difference between the playoffs and the regular season. And Jalen Williams had one really awesome game, but he was 3 of 16 last night. Chet Holmgren's been fine. Not great. Isaiah Hartenstein is fine. Not great. Minus 17 yesterday. The formula for Denver is clear. I think that they're not the better team, but they should win this series because they have by far the best player. Nikola Jokic is like, okay, I think Shai's going to win MVP, but all of this stuff about who's the best player in the NBA and having these debates. And again, weirdly, it's former players that are the only ones that are still standing on this. But the idea that like Shai is as good as Jokic and watching the two of them go head to head in a series, like I honestly think that you got to be brain dead. Like you're either running an agenda or you're just not getting it at all. Like I don't even know the case. It's crazy how good this guy is. And this is the formula for Denver. Can you at least just hold the fort? And yesterday they won the minutes where they were able to sit Nikola Jokic for a couple minutes at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Can you at least hold the fort during those minutes? Can you find a couple of minutes to rest Jamal Murray? Same thing in the fourth quarter. You can't play those guys the way that they did in game five, where it was run them into the ground and expect them to be able to produce for the entirety of the fourth. It's just not sustainable. And still Jokic is at 41 and I think Murray was 42 minutes. But here's the other part of it. Jokic just needs Murray to knock down shots, to be what he is. Get 25, man. Give me 25. And then they need one other guy. And yesterday it was Christian Brown. They just need one other guy. That's how good Jokic is. He basically plays with two other guys and he can win. Their other starter, just so that people, is like Michael Porter Jr., has had multiple games in the series where he's only had 3 points or fewer. He had 10 yesterday. Aaron Gordon had 5. That's fine. That's all he needs. Good game for Julian Strother too. Like they just need one depth guy to not kill them. They need one starter in Jamal Murray to be a scorer, a consistent creator. And then they need one other guy to knock down shots. And that's the greatness of Jokic. Like, again, go through the history of the game and tell me how many players there were that can do that. That's genuinely the last guy that could do it like that was LeBron. That's it. That's it. As great as Steph is, be honest, he's never doing that, but whatever. All right, Armin, Brandon, what did we miss?
So you mentioned it earlier briefly. The Jays did lose yesterday to Tampa Bay, 8-3 at home, but the Rogers Center Dome was open for the first time this season. So it had me thinking, you know, is the Rogers Center roof opening, does that kind of mark the official or unofficial start of summer?
Yeah. In this city, there's two things for me. There's that first beautiful day, that pre-summer day where, you know, the bad weather is still coming, but you get that one 20 degree or maybe even less, like 17 to 20, but it's sunny and you want to walk outside and then you just see people on the streets. You just see people. And this is, I think, this isn't just a Toronto thing. This parallels with everywhere in Canada or anywhere where there's a cold weather climate, but just like that renewed sense of optimism. You go on a walk, all of a sudden you're outside and you're like, woo, this is nice. I can get used to this. You're starting to text friends and be like, hey, should we do a sneaky patio right now, even though it's going to drop to like 6 degrees in a couple of hours? Yeah, I think we should. That is your first patio is the official start of summer to me. Your first patio, not with heat lamps, by the way. Like this is, we're talking in the sun. You can sit in the shade and you're fine with it. That is the official start for me. But this is pretty damn near close. I'll tell you that. Of all the things that have excited me about the Blue Jays season so far, that's number one, was seeing that shot. I first saw it on Ben Nicholson-Smith's Twitter, and he just posted, I think it was just good morning or whatever. It was the shot of the dome open and the sun coming through. And it's such a drastically different ballpark, such a drastically different experience, especially even if things are going poorly, you're having fun in the sun, that, yeah, you see the CN Tower and you're able to take that shot that everybody takes with your phone. And yeah, it's a huge part of it. I'm so excited to go to a game. I'm probably going to go Saturday. I cannot wait. Cannot wait to go to more Blue Jays baseball games, even though the product itself has been so up and down. But yeah, the Dome Open it's the best. There's no place I'd rather be. Other than doing Leafs talk after a Leafs win, which hopefully ends up happening tonight. We'll see you tonight for Leafs talk. Game's at 8. It's on 680. Go Leafs.